When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's a destination. We are finally here.
Let's go.
What is good? Welcome back to another episode of Destination Dynasty. I am your gracious host, Scott Connor. You can find me on X at CharlesChillFFB. And as always, everything at Destination Devi over at DestinationDevi.com. Join the Discord either through the website or through Patreon.com/allgas. Heisman tier members and Dynasty Trades in 5 tier members get access to bonus content in the Discord, along with a lot of other perks. If you join, and as Ray always says, if you join for a month and you do not like it, hit us up. We will give you your money back. So it's a community that we encourage everybody to jump into if you like the content that is on this feed, on the YouTube channel, on the podcast radio feed, on the Wake Up with Ray G feed, anywhere Destination Devi does content, along with Dynasty Trades in 5 on YouTube. If you like any of it, give us a listen, give us a subscribe, give us a like. Consider joining the community over at Destination Devi, and you'll never look back. And I want to give a quick plug. Underdog Fantasy, it is going to be huge for myself, for Destination Devi, for the entire crew from now to the start of the 2024 season. And as everybody knows, last year we did a draft stream. The draft stream this year is going to be bigger and better than ever. And we have tons of great prizes, jerseys, autographs, roster reviews, Heisman memberships, a ton of stuff to give away on the draft stream, but you can enter to win a multitude of items. If you sign up for Underdog, use the promo code DDD for Destination Devi Draft, DDD. Deposit up to $10 on Underdog, and you're entered to win all of the items that will be given away on the draft stream coming up here in a month. So if you're not a member of Underdog, if you have friends or family members that aren't signed up, enter the promo code DDD, and you will be entered to win all of the prizes that we'll be giving away during the 2024 NFL Draft live stream. So check us out there. Be sure to put it on your calendar to join us. We will be there all 3 days. All of the content creators given our live takes. There'll be some crossover with Trades in 5 as well. So if you're coming over from that community, that's where we will be with Trades in 5. And then obviously all the DD crew will be over there as well. So check that out again, promo code DDD when you sign up for Underdog. And we'll see you on the draft stream here in a month. So on to this week's episode. And we are going to cut right to the chase. We are about 5 weeks away from rookie drafts kicking off. Everyone that probably has rookie drafts starting the day after the NFL draft concludes, but definitely that week after the draft concludes. Monday morning, I probably have 15 rookie drafts that'll be kicking off, a couple others that start on Saturday night, Sunday morning, post-NFL draft. And I think it's important when those early drafts get here that obviously you have a plan. You've followed what's happened in the draft. You have a pulse on everybody's draft capital, everybody's landing spots, because you're probably not going to have a ton of time, unless, of course, you're tuned into the draft stream, which this is the analysis we will be giving after every skill player is picked. There will be some analysis that will be out there regarding kind of where those players fit. But it's important for those early rookie drafts to have a pulse on those players, on those landing spots. But to be honest, for those of us that are in a ton of leagues, it is often very difficult to optimize all of your picks when you have that many drafts and you have that many picks that are upcoming in a short period of time. I mean, I would be lying if I said that I have the ability to go through every one of those leagues. And in this league, I have the 105. This league, I have the 108. This league, I have a bunch of seconds, maybe a bunch of thirds. And to say that even if they're 8-hour clocks, a lot of my drafts are 4-hour clocks or 6-hour clocks, but even if they were 8-hour clocks, would I have the ability to go through every one of them, grind the trades that I need to grind, go through and be able to figure out what I want to do optimally with all of those picks? So that's going to be the main focus, and I'll talk more about this on Dynasty Portfolio Weekly as well, of how to kind of get ahead of the game with the class and with those picks before you get on the clock. Now, if your draft's not for a month after the rookie draft, there's going to be plenty of content, plenty of post-NFL draft mock drafts that are out there. So it's not going to be a mystery if you're drafting in June, kind of what the ADP is. You're going to have enough of a sample size. Heck, you're going to probably be in communities like ours that will actually have live ADP that will be thrown up there. So that it's not going to be a mystery as to what your picks are most likely going to be. But for those drafts that happen right away, now sure, you're going to be able to watch the draft stream, you're going to be able to formulate your own tiers, rankings, etc. pretty quickly. There's going to already be content out there Saturday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night. So if you're somebody that's relying on content creators to put it out there, sure, there's going to be some within that 48 hours or so after the last pick is made of the draft. But let's assume that's not going to be enough. Let's assume you want to start optimizing before that. And it's very easy to sit there and say, well, I know what's going to be available at the 110 and the 203 and the 208. I've consumed a lot of mock draft content, kind of have a pulse on how things are going to go. But I think this is an interesting class. And the reason I say that is because I've said it numerous times on Trades in 5. I think I've mentioned it almost every episode when we've talked to rookies on Destination Chill, is we are projecting an influx of receivers. This is a great receiver class. Hell, you do a mock draft, you're already into the late third, early fourth, and there's still receivers where you can squint and go, man, I kind of like that receiver. And there's going to be so many of them that we already know that some rules about certain draft capital thresholds and whatnot, that is going to be blown out of the water this year. It's not going to matter as much. There's going to be good receivers with good profiles that just because there's 20 to 25 good receivers, they're going to fall to the third round. And you're going to go, man, I really don't want to take a third round receiver here over a second round receiver or over a late first round receiver. But the landing spot and the opportunity, it's going to cause people to have a little bit of a pause, especially with last year with Tank Dell and Puka Nacua. Even Rashee Rice was not one of the first receivers off the board at all, based on the fact that he went to the Chiefs, who people had soured on that landing spot, and there were other receivers that were drafted ahead of him. So even him, even though he had a rising ADP, just because it was a decent player in a what would be a decent landing spot, it still wasn't, let's vault him all the way up. Whereas this year, I think a lot more people are going to look at the landing spot and the opportunity and just say, give me that guy. I don't care if it's a guy picked at pick 38 versus pick 78. Historically, that's a bad process. But they're going to remember guys like Jonathan Mingo and say, man, I really don't want Jonathan Mingo. I don't like his situation. They're also going to remember guys like Tank Dell. Well, he went a full round after Jonathan Mingo, but I like his quarterback. I like his offense. That's going to happen this year. My fear with the receivers is right now, we are just mocking every receiver that gets good draft capital from the 109. And I'm excluding the top three receivers. I'm not even counting them, not even counting the top four quarterbacks, not even counting Brock Bowers. Let's assume the draft starts at 109 in most leagues. We are just mocking every receiver from like 109 to 212. And the argument is, well, he's going to get good draft capital. Let me try Keon Coleman, Troy Franklin, Xavier Worthy, Roman Wilson, Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, A.D. Mitchell. There's others. Xavier Leggett. Got to just keep taking them all because they're all going to get good draft capital. The reality is a lot of them are not going to get good landing spots. They're going to get landing spots where people are going to go, ah, man, there's a lot of target competition in that landing spot. Then there's going to be somebody else. Maybe you like them, maybe you don't. That's going to fall, go a little bit later, but they go to a spot where you really like their early opportunity. Now, I don't know who those players are going to be, but the class is deep enough where you're going to see enough landing spots that you're not going to like, and that's not exactly going to correlate with the draft capital that you do not like. So there's going to be some receivers that you like that get good landing spots that get lower draft capital. Then there's going to be receivers that get good draft capital, hell, maybe even the late first, mid to late first. And then there's guys that went around later and you're going to mean, ah, man, I really like that landing spot better. So you're going to violate some of these principles, but I don't think it's necessarily a wrong move because there's so many good receivers. You're not going to see many teams just take three receivers. So because there's so many good receivers in the draft, let's just say you make a list of receivers that you think could go in the first three rounds of the NFL draft. So including the comp picks, you're into the hundreds, right? Let's assume there's a list of 20 receivers. I'll go conservative and say 20. There's probably a bigger list that you would say could go in that top three. Now, there's not that many that are going to go in the top three. But let's just say your list is 20. On average, you're usually around 12 to 14 receivers that go in that range. This year, it's probably going to be 15 to 20 that go in that first three-round range. Now, of those 15 to 20, well, let's just make it easier and say 20. I think that's overextending a little bit, but let's just say 20. How many teams double up on receiver in the first three rounds? Probably rare. Maybe one or two. So right there, of those 20 receivers, let's say two double up. A team takes one in the first, then a team takes one in the third. That's not unforeseen or unheard of for a team like Arizona, right? That only has like Michael Wilson on their roster right now. But let's say they do it and one other team does it. I can't even think of an example, but let's say Pittsburgh maybe does it. I don't know. Let's just assume only two teams out of the 20 that get taken double tap receiver. So you have 18 unique landing spots for that list of receivers that go in the first three rounds. Now, some of those landing spots you're not going to like. You're going to go, man, Tampa Bay took that receiver in the end of the second. I don't like that spot. You're going to have a landing spot where Tennessee takes a receiver in the second. Ah, man, they're behind even Treylon Burks, Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins. I don't really love that landing spot. Then there's going to be others where maybe the landing spot is great, but the draft capital is low. Ooh, Cincinnati took the T. Higgins replacement in the third. They took Brendan Rice. Man, I don't really like Brendan Rice, but he's okay. But man, he could be the T. Higgins replacement. Then you get a team that takes a receiver in the first that maybe didn't need one or doesn't look like it's immediate opportunity. So you're going to go, I'm going to push that guy down a little bit just because, I don't know. I don't know if I can use the 110 because he's still going to be a first-round receiver. So you're just going to have to weigh, do I want to take him at the 109, 110, 111? Or am I going to push him down to the mid-second because there's another couple receivers that go in the first part of the second round, and this is what I suspect is going to happen. Teams like New England, Washington, the Giants, those teams could take their receiver in the second, and it's a good pedigree receiver. Washington takes Ladd McConkey in the second. The Giants, instead of taking receiver at an early part of the draft, the second they take A.D. Mitchell. He's the best receiver now on the Giants. So now you're weighing, okay, do I take that guy over the first round receiver? So you're going to see these decisions cascade. So even though we do these mock drafts, and this is just a hypothesis, and then I'll get to the point of the episode. I'm kind of dragging on, but just this exercise alone highlights that when we do a mock, what we do is go, do they have a good profile? Yep. Do I think they're going to get decent draft capital? Yep. So let's just take them. Let's just take the player, take the player, take the player. Then you look up through two rounds and there's 14 receivers. And the reality is there's not going to be 14 receivers that people really want. What's going to happen is you're going to see a couple more quarterbacks jump into the second round, maybe even the first. Whether you like Bo Nix or Michael Penix or Spencer Rattler, there's a very good chance at least one of those guys, if not more, goes in a range where a team plans to start him this year. And whether you like that or not is a different story. But there's going to be somebody that goes, hey, I can get a starting quarterback at the 202. I'm going to do that. Running backs. If you just kind of accept that all running backs are year to year and that every running back in this class is in some sort of committee, there's going to be a lot of running backs that land in spots where you go, you know what, that's not a bad spot. The Texans take a running back in the third round. Ah, man, I don't know about that, but they took that running back in the third. He's now the Joe Mixon backup. That's a player you may go, you know what, I kind of like that player at the end of the second. Even though that landing spot wouldn't be great, you can sell yourself that they used enough capital and it was a player that you liked. So boom, you're putting some running backs up there now, even if they're just committee backs slash handcuffs early on. Look at last year's class. Look at where people were taking Kendre Miller and Tank Bigsby and Zach Charbonnet, Chase Brown, Roschon Johnson. You can go down the line. Like, those types of players that get decent draft capital at running back will go in the second round. So there's just a lot of players, which makes this class very intriguing for this topic that we're going to cover today, which is draft pick war. And I want to get a handle early on the war value of your draft picks. And I'm using the roster construction series format, 12 teams, start 11, 30-man rosters with 1.75 tight end premium. And I'm not even going to specify best ball versus lineup. There's just different theories as to how to use the data. But in this case, we're just using total war. And I can break it down by class. I can break it down by war per game, etc. But just total war. And what I did is I tried to equate each class over the last 5 years. So I started in 2018 and went to 2022 because I wanted to get a two-year sample size of each rookie class for the last 5 years. Obviously, 2023, we only have 1 year of data, so it's incomplete. So I went back 5 years in terms of getting 2 years of data. So technically, I went back 6 years. And I took the first 2 years war data for each class, and I ranked them basically 1 through 48. Then I took the top 36 in each class, so the two-year sample size. So in 2018, you take the two-year average war, or war per game, or total war, however you want to break it down, and I essentially ranked them 1 through 36 based on the total, from highest to lowest. And that's what equates to the 101, 102, 103, 104, etc. Now, it's not an exact science. And I'm sure some people are listening to this saying, well, there's some flaws to the way you calculated that data. There is. There is. If anything, this is assuming that we are very exact in picking these players. And we absolutely are not. So when I say I took the pick 24 or 212 in a class, and I'll just throw up an example so everybody can reference it. In 2019, 212, the example was Kelvin Harmon. Okay, now Kelvin Harmon had negative war, which is very common. But 212, in terms of where he ranked in his class, he was the 212. Now you can go back and look, was he actually ADP 212? No, he wasn't. Depending on what site you look at, he was lower than that. Because if you remember, Kelvin Harmon fell in the draft. And there's a lot of examples where I'll give you the player name and you'll go, well, that guy wasn't a first-round pick. Yeah, but that's where he finished from a war perspective. So this is hindsight analysis. But what it's actually highlighting is it's probably more efficient than we actually are at making these picks. So in a way, this data is actually overestimating the value of the picks a little bit because we're not really that great of making these picks. Now you can also play that the other way and say, because we are so inexact of making these picks, there's a chance that you could hit on a player that ranked ninth in his class in war, and you get that player at the 210, at the 304. Like, there's some names we can pull up. Ramondre Stevenson, for instance, in the 2021 class, 10th in war in his class. Now, Ramondre Stevenson was not a first-round pick, so there's some inexact science to this. But what's interesting is at the very top, we're actually very good at picking players. You go through each class, and if I read off the top 6 to 8 in each class, like clockwork, it is the players that we were drafting in the top 6 to 8. Maybe not every single one of them is correct, but the majority, that's where we're very good at picking players. After that, it tails off, and I'll talk about that in this data. But what I tried to do is I tried to take these 5 years of data. So I took the first 2 years of each class from 2018 to 2022 and just equated that to what it looks like from a draft slot perspective. So then I took the median average of each draft slot, so the 101 all the way to the 312, so it gives you 36 picks, and just looked at the distribution of war at each pick. And it looks exactly like you would think. It's a line that steadily just continues downward and downward and downward, and then at some point it goes below zero, And then at some point when it reaches the very bottom, so the last pick of the third round, it's very heavily negative. Now, again, I'm looking at total WAR here. So you have to remember that total WAR is just the raw amount of WAR for the player. If you did the average, the graph basically looks the same. It's just broken down on a per-game perspective. But if you looked at either graph, you would notice it's just basically a steady downward line, which is what you would expect. But we have to remember with total WAR, if you're looking at this, especially if you're playing in a lineup league, total WAR is only realized if the player is in your lineup. So you're going to look at some of these players and you go, well, how is the 212 historically a negative WAR pick? And really what that's saying is if you draft a player, if you draft the 24th best player in the class, and again, we have to assume if you're making the draft pick and you're picking at the 212, that you're getting the 24th best player. Now, I know everybody will listen to this and go, well, you know, I'm better at drafting than everyone else, and if I'm picking there, I'm probably getting the 16th best player, not the 24th. But you have to assume if you're getting the 24th best player, their total WAR through 2 years is going to be negative. Now, what does that mean? Well, think about it from a week-to-week standpoint. And this is something Ray and I, when we finally record WAR games, which I promise you will be here before the draft, this is one thing that we will go through and talk about. In a lineup league, this negative WAR is only really penalizing you or reflective of the player if they're in your starting lineup. So think about roster construction in a lineup league and why you roster construct around more running backs and quarterbacks. From a week-to-week standpoint, they're generally the easiest to determine when to play them. They're the players that if you can forecast opportunity, or for quarterbacks, forecast just them starting a game, they're not necessarily a negative WAR player for that week. Now, a backup running back, a third-string running back, a guy that was the third running back on a team, without an injury, they may get 1 to 2 carries a game, 1 to 2 touches. They may get a catch and a target. They may get 2 rush attempts and a target. But they're playing, so they're counting as a game played. But because they're only scoring 1 point, you know, think of a player that is literally the third running back on a team, but they still get a touch or two or three. You know, the Bengals had that a couple times last year, but they have like Travion Williams as their third running back. He'll get like 3 snaps. Maybe he'll get 1 carry. So he's registering a game played, but if you run his WAR for that week, it's very highly negative. So you're going to look at it and go, wow, how is he so negative for the week? Well, yeah, but nobody started him. So even though on that week he has negative WAR, it wasn't realized because you would have never started him. You would have never started him when he projects for 2 touches. So you have to remember when you're talking about total WAR that you have to look at how you would deploy each position to figure out if that WAR is even negative to you. So it's important in the conversation. Now in best ball, if you play best ball dynasty, it's a little different. Because every time one of these players is on your active roster, it's not that they're getting you negative WAR for the week, but there's obviously an opportunity cost, right? It's the reason you don't roster a lot of backup quarterbacks and running backs in a best ball league. Because they're guaranteed to give you negative WAR, which means they can't give you positive WAR. So you probably don't want to roster too many of those. In a lineup league, it doesn't matter because what your WAR is pulling from is only the 11 starters, not the 30 roster spots. So negative WAR isn't necessarily a bad thing. There's players with total negative WAR, but you go, yeah, those players have been pretty useful for their careers. I mean, I'll give an example right now. I'm looking at 2022. Some players that have been negative WAR for their career, Ty Chandler. Okay, now Ty Chandler only has 12 games that have actually counted for his career, right? Didn't really play as a rookie. So last year he has the games that he actually counted. So he has a smaller sample size, but his total WAR per game is negative. His total WAR is negative. However, we know there were pockets where Ty Chandler was usable. Jerome Ford is the same thing. Negative WAR for his career. 18 games registered negative WAR. But we know there were numerous games where he was positive. He was usable. Now, that doesn't mean that he was positive WAR in every game that he was available. But it means there were games where you're like, all right, I would know to start him or not. Those are the games I should really be calculating whether he's positive or negative. So you have to remember that with certain positions. So when you see negative WAR, you're going to see running backs and quarterbacks in the negative, and you're going to go, well, how is that guy negative? And generally, it just means because there's probably opportunities where they weren't starting, but a game played was counted, or they just had a very, very, very small amount of playing time, so their WAR, of course, is going to be negative. If Desmond Ridder comes in and throws three passes in a game and takes six snaps, maybe he gets one series. Like, he's going to be an extremely negative WAR quarterback for that week, but nobody started him, so it didn't really matter. So you have to kind of realize where you can absorb negative WAR weeks, what positions. And obviously in lineup leagues, it's running back and it's quarterback. In best ball leagues, it's probably wide receivers, because a lot of wide receivers will end up with negative WAR, but it doesn't mean that they had three very positive WAR games throughout the season. And that's the whole point of a best ball league, right? That's why you roster so many receivers in a best ball league. You accept that there's going to be negative WAR receivers on my team. But because it's best ball, I never have to worry about when they happen. So I'm willing to accept 75% of the weeks the guy doesn't crack my lineup. But when he does, he's still usable because I have so many of them. So it kind of goes back to roster construction. If that doesn't highlight the difference between best ball and lineup, where lineup, you're like, man, I really don't want to clog my team with a lot of tight ends and wide receivers. And in best ball, I don't want to clog my team with a lot of extra running backs and quarterbacks. They're literally polar opposites. So just understand, when you use this data, just understand your format. And it's not so much about the WAR. It's about what to pick with those picks. You know, if you're in a best ball league, there's a reason you don't treat the 210 the same as you would in a lineup league. You especially would treat a pick like the 310 way different. Best ball league at the 310, I probably don't want to take a stab on that sixth round running back that landed in a decent spot. Because unless that player is literally getting touches from week one, or has the ability to be sold for more than what their draft cost was, they're probably an immediate zero in best ball. In a lineup league, it doesn't matter. There's no opportunity cost lost by having that player on my team, so I'll just stash that third string running back on my bench. Chris Rodriguez from last year is a great example. Chris Rodriguez had one game you could have started him. In a lineup league, that might have been worth holding him all year. Best ball league, he killed you. And it wasn't that you got negative WAR every time he was on your team in a best ball, but you knew it was negative WAR going into the week, and thus you basically just ate that big negative when you probably could have filled that spot with somebody else that had a much higher chance of getting positive for the week. So it's very important to know the difference, and then when I go through this data, it'll make a little more sense why the data says what it says. So let's go through it. We're going to go through the two-year WAR of each pick, and I'll just kind of describe kind of what it looks like. So you start with the 101, and it's very clear. And I'll post this chart in the Destination Devi Discord if you're interested in it. I'll post this chart. I've already posted a couple of those in there, but I'll post this in there. So if anybody's in there, you can get access to this data and you can see exactly what I'm looking at. There's a spreadsheet with a bunch of graphs. So if you're interested, I'll post it in there. Probably throw a couple things on Twitter as well. But you start with the 101. So historically, if you get the best player in a class, you absolutely smash. Almost six total WAR for the first 2 years. So we're talking about a player that is an immediate positional advantage, especially if that's at a quarterback or at a running back position. You're getting probably one of the more high leverage assets. And then it drops off just a little bit. 102 and 103 are very similar, and I'm roughly using these as draft pick values. So just kind of, I know the class is right in front of us, and you can go through and you can say, okay, well, you know, I like this pick better than this pick because of the names that I could potentially assign. But just remember this. When you're going through and you know what picks you have in your leagues, I'm using this as kind of a rough guesstimate of where the tier breaks are going to be, just based on what this looks like historically. And it makes it very useful when you get into some of the later picks, then you think about your format and what to do with them. And I'll talk about that as well. But let's just start back at the 101. The 101 is a significant advantage over the 102. I mean, significant. We're talking about, you know, almost a full point, more than a full point in WAR from pick 101 to 102. 102 and 103, almost the same. And if you look back at a lot of classes, you go, yeah, that's kind of the same. You know, there's always like two really good players at the 102 and 103. And sometimes it's difficult to choose between the two. Sometimes it can be need-based. Somebody might want a receiver. Somebody might need a quarterback, exactly what we're facing in this year's class. And I think you can probably look at the 102, 103, depending on need, very similar. Now, maybe this year it's 101 and 102 are a lot closer together based on the current projections of the players. But you get the point. They're both very similar historically, the 102 and 103. Then you have the 104 and 105 are also both very significantly similar. But it's a big drop off again from 102 and 103, almost a full point from 103 to 104. So the next cluster would be that 104, 105 pick, where you're still talking about more than three WAR for the first 2 years. So again, a very, very strong contributor from a total WAR perspective. And if one of these is a running back or a quarterback, that number could be even higher if you factor in when they actually started. Not all rookie running backs and rookie quarterbacks, even that get great draft capital, are in there on day one. So something to think about again when you're looking at the total numbers, depending on what position they're in. Then there's a drop-off, and again, the 106 and 107 are actually almost identical. And it's kind of interesting because you look at it from this perspective in this year's class, that could be Rome Odunze versus Brock Bowers. It's almost the same. It just depends on what you want or what you need. And again, this is a 1.75 tight end premium, and I did that for a reason because I think it highlights how maybe tight ends are often overdrafted but also undervalued once you've kind of hit on the tight end itself. So if I could just tell you, I'm going to get a tight end that is Cade Otton, like that type, that's actually something that we probably undervalue. What I don't want to do is use a high pick on a tight end, because then it's like the outcomes that I must hit to pay off that pick is Mark Andrews. I mean, Mark Andrews over the last 5 years is basically, excluding 2023, I don't have that data in front of me, but Mark Andrews is by far the best tight end of the last 5 years. So from 2018 to 2022, Mark Andrews is by far the best tight end. And he still only gave you like 3.3 WAR, which compared to some of the other positions isn't a great bet. But when you do hit on a solid tight end, there's others on here and you go, okay, at least that player was positive. And if a player has positive total WAR for the first 2 years, they're probably pretty good. It means that on a week-to-week basis, they're probably helping you, especially if you know when to play him in a lineup league. And in best ball, if you have positive WAR for the season, you're definitely helping. Because that means to have positive WAR, you definitely had weeks where you had negative. So to have positive, you were definitely hitting the lineup numerous times. So it's interesting, if you look at this year, 106 and 107 are very similar. Then it drops off. Again, it drops off, and you have a cluster now of 108 through 110. They're all very similar, less than 10% difference between those three slots. So 108 to 110. 111 is actually closer to 110 than it is 112, but it's kind of a tier break, and then there's another tier break to the 112. And then the 112 to the 201, big difference again. So I would kind of look at those picks from like 111 to 201 as historically a big difference, but I generally think people value those picks the same. So that was something that stood out to me with this data is, man, I don't care about the 111. Whereas somebody else probably would be willing to move up to that 111. I'll move back to the 202. But this data says otherwise. This data says taking an educated shot on a player, probably at that 111, 112 spot, is much more advantageous than it would be to trade back to the 202. And in fact, the data says it. From 110 to 112, there's almost a 0.7 total WAR drop-off. But from the 110 to the 202, there's almost a 1.4 WAR drop up to the point where the 202 is almost getting to zero. So maybe it isn't as advantageous to move back from the 110 to the 202. We think all those players are in the same tier. But I think what we don't realize is that that is also assuming that we're drafting with very little information. Right now, you do a mock draft and literally the player somebody takes at the 110, you're like, wow, I could maybe get them at the 202 or vice versa. But that's assuming that we don't have any information. Whereas this data says when you actually get into the draft, the 9th or 10th best player in the class usually is a big difference between the 13th, 14th, 15th player in the class. And I would have never thought that. I would have just thought, well, you know, it doesn't really matter. Those are just dart throws. They all have the same hit rate. Not exactly if you're using this data. And again, This assumes that we are actually getting the player we pick at the 112, that we're getting the 12th best player, which is not always exact. So there's, of course, going to be some nuance and some fluidity here with people saying, well, that would be my 110 versus that would be somebody else's 203. So clearly there is a choice discrepancy here that comes into play. But I think looking at the data in hindsight is kind of interesting. Then you get to the 203. So the 203 is where it really gets interesting, because at the 203, that is one pick before it basically hits zero. So the 203 is 0.154 total war, and then the 204 is at 0.01 total war. That point, it goes below zero. So that's the inflection point, the 204. Now, people will look at this graph, and one of the takeaways they will say is that, well, every pick below the 204 is basically negative war. That's not necessarily the case. What that means is their total war over that two-year sample size is probably going to likely be below zero. Now, what does that mean in practical terms, right? In practical terms, if you draft a running back at the 205, the expectation is that pick, if that's the 17th best player in the class, is going to have negative total war over 2 years. However, we know that if it is a running back, if that player has negative war for 80% of the games that they play in, but the 20% that you know when they're going to get opportunity, they're more up into the positive war range for that week, you're probably much more likely to capture a bigger chunk of that positive war, and a lot of the negative war is just going to sit on your bench. You didn't start it. Now, in best ball, I think this is where in best ball becomes very interesting. Because that same example in best ball, if you draft that running back that you're positive is going to have a role, it's going to happen this year. A team's going to draft a running back that you like, and you're going to go, man, all that guy has to do is beat out Izzy Abanikanda for the number two job on the Jets. But then we break camp, and he didn't beat out Izzy Abanikanda. And so now you're sitting there going, well, okay, hopefully something breaks, and maybe he gets a little more opportunity as the season goes on. And then we're 8 weeks in, and guess what? It's Breece Hall and Izzy Abanikanda, and the running back you drafted, who the Jets drafted in the fourth round or the fifth round. And I'm not saying the Jets are going to draft a running back, but let's just say they do. Let's say the Jets decide to draft Will Shipley in the fifth. And you're like, man, I love Will Shipley. He's a better prospect than Izzy Abanikanda. I'm going to take him in the third of my rookie draft. Boom, you take him in the third of your rookie draft in a best ball league. And he sits on your bench, and you just sit there, wait patiently. Man, oh yeah, eventually he'll overtake Izzy Abanikanda. He'll start getting some work. And maybe he teases you a little bit, gets a couple touches here, a couple touches there. Maybe Breece Hall misses a game, and he has a 60-40 split with Izzy, where Izzy's the lead back, but Will Shipley's getting some work, and maybe he looks better. I'm just trying to tell the story that a lot of people tell themselves on in best ball, as they go, well, eventually he'll get that role. Meanwhile, you look up, and it's year two of Will Shipley. He still isn't guaranteed to get that role. And how many negative war weeks have you just had sitting on your roster? Now, it didn't hurt your team, per se, because he never made your lineup. He was never in your lineup. Maybe that 1 week where he was in the 60-40 committee, he maybe hit your RB2 spot or one of your flex spots. But you don't necessarily realize the negative war because it doesn't show up in your lineup. But what you're missing out on is the potential to hit on a tight end or a receiver that had much more likelihood in that given week of actually hitting your lineup. Now, those guys may also be negative war for the week, but you also know in a best ball league, if you had to pick between the two, what would you rather have if you could forecast the running back was going to be the RB3 and the wide receiver is going to be the wide receiver 4 or even the tight end 2? You're sitting there going, man, there's a chance the tight end 2 or the wide receiver 4 gets a touchdown. Or if there's an injury, they step right into more volume. Whereas it's just much more unlikely at running back. So think about these numbers and think about how to use these picks. So just because it goes negative at 204, 205, doesn't mean those picks aren't worth anything. However, what you have to reconcile is this. In a lineup league especially, okay, so here's where I think the lineup league strategy is huge. And something I've talked about for years, how do I value spot starts? How do I value a pick that I give up for a spot start, two spot starts, three spot starts, a rest of season worth of spot starts. So think about what this data is telling you. I can show you that based on this data, the 208 or the 20th player in the class is going to be negative 0.8 WAR for the first 2 years of their career. Now, that may have been a running back that had a couple usable windows in there. Think the Ty Chandler example that I gave previously. However, you also can't necessarily guarantee that that window is ever going to come up. So if you're sitting here in season trying to gauge, okay, what is the value of last season's Jerome Ford? Nick Chubb gets hurt. Jerome Ford is probably going to be the guy for the rest of the year. I know they brought back Kareem Hunt. They had some other running backs that were in or out. But let's just assume you were willing to make the bet that Jerome Ford is going to be the premier touchback on the Browns the rest of the season. You had to gauge, okay, what do I want to pay for that? And a lot of people probably would have given a random future second for Jerome Ford. But others, you would have just heard, well, you know, when Nick Chubb comes back, he's not going to be the guy. If Nick Chubb doesn't come back, he's still not going to be the guy. They're going to draft somebody else. They're going to bring in somebody else. And they justify not giving up a future second for a guy like Jerome Ford. Now, I get it. If your analysis, I don't want to give up a second because I just don't need him. You're not buying him for the asset value. But to argue that because he's not going to have a long-term role, that I'm not interested in paying a second for what I think could be 14 weeks of being able to choose whether I want to start this guy or not when I know he's probably got the opportunity, that's where there's a hole in a lot of our games in lineup leagues. So I implore everybody to think about it. Know your league economy. Know how your league values spot start quarterbacks, spot start running backs. And it's not just the spot start. It's not Tommy DeVito starting one game, so someone wants a third. Sure, there's examples of that. But a lot of leagues, those guys just go for a third. If I stash a bunch of backup quarterbacks like I do in lineup leagues, and I have five of them starting in a week, and I look at that situation and I say, all right, CJ Beathard is starting for two games. But like he's got really no value outside of that. Like there's not a chance he starts the rest of the season. Sure, I'll sell him for a third. Someone wants to spot start him for a third, fine. That's a fair price for a game. Two games. Same with running back. Gets a little trickier when you have like a Gardner Minshew situation where you know he's starting the rest of the year. Someone's essentially buying a dozen starts, not just two, not just three. So the prices adjust, and it also adjusts depending on the player. There's some players that if they get in there, they're good enough where maybe they give you an even better than just replacement value ceiling. A Sam Howell type. Sam Howell has more than just he's a backup quarterback. He's got backup quarterback that had pretty good WAR when he started. So higher upside for fantasy. Top 12 quarterback for fantasy on a weekly basis when he's in there. But he's also got some extra conditional value where he's still a young quarterback that people like. So you can see where he would be a little bit more of a player that you would want to buy if you could get more than just the required spot starts for that second rounder. But think about that in lineup leagues when you're trying to apply this data. Like, it's not just about the actual WAR that you are getting for the two-year period. It's thinking about, what am I getting in this short spurt? Maybe I'm getting four starts. Is that worth two-thirds? And this data says yes, because I can go down and we'll go down past the second round. So we get into the 306, right in the middle of the third round, right? So for the first 2 years, on average, the 30th best player in a class is giving you negative 2.8 WAR. Now, we don't know the distribution of that. You'd have to literally look at each player individually and be like, okay, what did their WAR per week look like? For a running back that is a backup, that's a lot where you get like day three running backs that are just backups or third string guys on teams. You're going to see a game log where it's just negative, 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 negative. Okay, well, that guy had a chance to play in week 7 of 2021. So maybe he had a shot to be positive WAR there. Now, again, just because you're in the lineup or just because you have opportunity doesn't mean you're going to be positive WAR. If that guy gets one start in 2 years and he puts up 7 points, he's still going to be negative WAR in that week. So that really puts into perspective the value of these picks. So here's my takeaway. Understand your format, best ball or lineup. understand any tight end premium, any point per carry. Like, you can find all of that stuff by running the war in your league. Look at the My League analytics. Look at the flex distribution. That'll tell you the story as to what positions are more important than others. But the bigger takeaway is, what do I want to spend my picks on? Make sure you're spending your picks based on your format optimally. And that is if you choose to make the pick. The biggest takeaway for me with this data is generally after that range where it goes negative. So let's just call it the 204, 205. Maybe we even extend that down a little bit. But there's a point where we are really overvaluing making the draft pick. Meaning just being able to say, okay, I'm on the clock at the 208. Scott can show me this data that says on average, the 20th best player or the 208 is negative 0.786 war for the first 2 years. Now, again, the distribution of that could be, well, there's a lot of negative weeks and then there's two really good weeks. And because he's a running back, I probably had a chance to start him in those two really good weeks. If it's best ball and it's a receiver, okay, he spiked twice. And I got that from, you know, the 208 rookie pick. Maybe you consider that to be a win. But generally, if you can lock in a really good shot at weekly war by using a draft pick, so think about it from a weekly perspective during the season. I give up 2/3 for a spot start running back that I think can start for 3 weeks. You may go, oh man, 2/3. I don't want to give up 2/3. I'll give you 1/3. And then you don't get the deal done. And that player goes on and gives you 1 week where they have really high war. Maybe they post a top 10 running back week. And you could have had him for 2/3. And then you look at it and you go, man, 2/3. If this guy had, and I'll just give an example of what a random running back in that range might give you on a weekly basis. So a pretty good week. So maybe you get like 0.1 war for one of those running backs weeks. If they finish inside the top 8 for a given week, you know, just think of a random backup that pops and has a top 8 week and you started him. What is that worth? And you may look at that and go, well, it's only 0.1 war for the week. But when you factor that in to being able to lock that in, and it's not like you're getting all the negative weeks because you're not starting them. So this example is more applicable in lineup with a running back and more applicable in best ball with a receiver. But if you're just getting that 1 week and you're paying this draft pick 1 for 1, and think about the advantage if you give up a second and you get 12 starts from Gardner Minshew. And maybe you started him 7 times, and 4 of those games, he was 0.1 war. Think about how much you just locked in relative to what you typically get with these picks. So the main takeaway isn't to not make draft picks. There's value in making a draft pick, picking a player at the 302, but a lot of times the analysis, and this is why Ray and I talk about this all the time on Destination Chill, the analysis when you draft that 302 should not be, I know this player is just going to really help me. And if you're going to make that pick, it better align with your format. That 302 better not be a 5th round running back in best ball. You are making a bet that you know that guy's going to have a role. If there's no role, it just becomes the Will Shipley Hopium example that I gave earlier. Same with a receiver in best ball. You draft a 3rd round receiver in the 3rd round in a lineup league, you better have some conviction that that guy's going to be a threshold receiver. Somebody that you know when to start. Otherwise, they're probably immediately a roster clogger. Unless, and this is the last takeaway with this episode, if you're going to make a pick and it goes outside of these parameters, I've already given you the data of kind of where it goes negative. But if you're going to make a pick, a lot of your picks below that negative range should be purely based on what can I do with the player? What is the perception of this player? Am I getting a player at the 302 that I can sell for a 2nd and a 3rd if anything positive happens? In that case, the war numbers are out the window. You've actually just profited because you've turned that negative expected war pick into future capital that you don't have to spend right now. And that's the last thing. Go through your leagues. Understand this data and say, okay, if I have a bunch of 2nds and 3rds, there's going to be players I want to take shots on. Absolutely. I already talked about that at the beginning of the show. There's going to be a lot of players in this class that are intriguing in the 2nd and 3rd round. But what I don't want to do specifically is just make all these picks and think that I need to get all these players. Because this data doesn't lie. If you draft a ton of players in the 2nd and the 3rd in this class, you're going to hit on a couple. You're going to find some ADV where you hit on a player and you can immediately flip them for double what you paid in August or in September. But a lot of them are just going to end up being negatives. And if you think about the market and how it works and why people overvalue those future seconds, future thirds, it's because they think they can get on the clock and, man, next year in the second, they're going to be able to outdraft everybody in the league. Or they're going to be able to use that second to do something else. And if it's the latter, they're probably pretty smart. But if they're thinking, man, next year's class is going to be stacked at running back, I need to get some seconds, really, they're just kind of drafting into the same situations that we're talking about in this episode. Drafting a running back and hoping there's weeks where they have some potential positive WAR to use. So the last takeaway is I want to be very selective. And this is why this exercise is going to be very important for those of you that have a ton of leagues. If you have 15 drafts that are going on at one time, don't just blindly go through and make every second, every third, every fourth rounder. Look at your roster construction. I already have 11 running backs on this team. Do I really need to draft Ray Davis at 308? Do I really need to take a shot on him? I like him. But with this roster construction where I already have 11 running backs, and I think 6 or 7 of them could have some sort of role early on, and a couple others might be an injury away. Do I need to add another? Would it be better off if I kicked that pick to the future? Because maybe because I have 11 running backs, I'm weak at QB3 here. I'm just rostering a bunch of backups. What if none of my backups actually hit during the year, and I have a quarterback injury? Wouldn't you rather have an extra third to throw at a quarterback if you need one for a week or two? So think about that. Think about what you need. Draft more for your roster construction, not just your format, lineup, or best ball, but look at your picks and go, do I really need to draft another backup QB here? Backup QBs are in play in lineup leagues. Sometimes we don't know where to draft Joe Milton, Michael Pratt, Jordan Travis. Like, I like all of those guys. There's going to be leagues where I take them. Probably not leagues where I'm already holding 12 backups. That 402 is probably better off being a future fourth, because I don't have to make the pick. I mean, obviously, I'd rather have something better than a fourth. Can I somehow add it to another piece to get a third? But the idea is I probably don't want to draft Jordan Travis when I'm already holding 10 backup quarterbacks. And I have a lot of rosters like that. If you follow my roster construction series, I have a lot of teams where I already have a bunch of backups. And as much as I'm excited to draft more backup QBs with that construction, there better be some sort of ADV attached. It better be a name that I think has a different type of value than Jake Browning. Jake Browning's value is Joe Burrow could get injured. There's no other value. So unless I'm going in a different direction with why I'm making the pick, and it's outside of the parameters of my roster construction. Think about the roster construction series where I talk about all the time. When can you kind of break the optimal? Well, you break the optimal when you think you have a pick that maybe could outperform for different reasons. Not just production, but I might be able to sell for more. That's when you can kind of go against your roster construction principles. But I will just say the last thing is probably the most overvalued thing right now is making picks in these ranges. And it's just quite simply, we are arrogant and we think we are better at drafting players than we are. So that's the main takeaway with this WAR data. Hopefully this helped everybody. Again, if you want access to it, join at the Patreon, patreon.com/allgas, or destinationdevy.com. Join the Trades and Vibe or the Heisman tier. In either one, you get access to this along with bonus content that talks about this kind of stuff in the Discord. And then again with Underdog, if you're not signed up with Underdog, sign up, deposit up to $10, use the promo code DDD, and you enter into the sweepstakes for all of the prizes, jerseys, autographs, roster reviews, DD memberships, a bunch of stuff will be given away over the 3 days of the draft stream coming up here in a month. So make sure you sign up. Again, use the promo code DDD, and you'll get entered into the prize giveaways for everything on the draft stream. With that, I will go ahead and sign off for the week. More to come. Get out there, make some moves, and check out Dynasty Portfolio Weekly, where I kind of go through some of these moves that I'm making over the next couple weeks before the draft. Be chill.